First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
This is WJCT News 89.9 in Jacksonville. Opinions expressed on the Friday Media Roundtable are those of our panelists and do not necessarily reflect the views of WJCT News.
The glass ceiling shattered in Duval as Jacksonville elects its first female mayor. Meanwhile, the search is on for a new Duval Schools chief and shocking revelations in federal court inside the JEA scandal. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we'll break down a very busy news week with our Friday roundtable, and you can join us, as always, the number 549-2937. Get on the line now, then later. It's our monthly listen to the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida inside JME, our Jacksonville music experience. But first this hour, it's Friday, and what a week it's been as we welcome David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. Hey, David.
Good morning, everybody.
Writer, regular contributor, Shelton Hall. Hi, Shelton.
Good morning.
Former city council president and regular contributor, Jack Webb.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me back.
And rounding out our fabulous foursome, a guy who we're all convinced probably has carpal tunnel syndrome right now, A.G. Gankarski of Jax Today. Hey, A.G.
Hey, a long time no talk.
I know, right? The man who never sleeps. Listen live on the radio or watch our video stream right now. We're up on Facebook and YouTube, and you can join us at 549-2937. Let's begin with our top story. In a race that garnered national and even international attention, Donna Deegan won the city's runoff election Tuesday night to become Jacksonville's first female mayor.
Love won today. Yeah! As much as I wanted to win this race for the people of Jacksonville, I wanted Love to win. Yeah!
With a theme of love over fear and change for good, Deegan's four-point victory over Jack's Chamber CEO Daniel Davis has energized Florida Democrats and, of course, shattered the city's hardest, highest glass ceiling. But what does it mean for the future of Jacksonville? We're going to begin the hour with a closer look. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Facebook always open. Let's begin with our former council president, Jack Webb. Later, we'll talk about the city council remaining in Republican hands. That said, a big victory for Democrats, for women of both parties. Donna Deegan ran a positive campaign, and I think most analysts would agree was a very strong, talented candidate for this position.
I think not only is it a big, it was a big win for Democrats, for women of any party affiliation. So it's a big win for the city of Jacksonville. I mean, to paraphrase Gerald Ford, our long municipal nightmare is over. And welcome aboard. It's great to see someone in who's going to take over the mayor's chair, the mayor's office, who has both intelligence and empathy. Something I believe has been lacking in City Hall for quite a period of time. So welcome aboard. She's going to do great, I think.
And you say this as someone who worked at City Hall, and you're talking about the campaign narratives she ran on, cleaning up corruption, opening up government. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, yes, it is, actually. You know, it's interesting, Melissa, because when Mayor-elect Deegan first jumped into the race, she was talking about the corruption, and I kind of discounted that a little bit. Okay, maybe she's overstating that a little bit in my last few weeks, what I've seen happening around this city, both in my professional capacity and just personally. She's got a lot, and especially with our discussion, upcoming discussion, JEA, she's right. She's dead on point. There's a lot that needs to be cleaned up in City Hall and throughout consolidated government. So
yeah,
looking forward to it.
549-2937, David Bauerlein. That was a message that resonated with Democrats, Republicans, and independents. Deegan got a decent chunk of Republican votes, and clearly that MPA vote was decisive in swinging her the victory, even though a lot more Republicans cast ballots on Election Day.
Right. So you look at the numbers, and Republicans were about 45% of the voter turnout, Democrats 42%. So just on paper, you go, okay, Republicans are going to win that race. But there were moderate Republicans who clearly voted for Donna Deegan. And also, you just look at the math. It's got to be that independents broke her way. A lot of that was reaction to the very the negative campaign that the Davis campaign ran. And this time, that type of campaign style didn't work. It had a backlash and it turned people off.
Yeah, it's the kind of campaigning that the consultant class believes pays off, that it's worth doing. It backfired this time. Shelton Hull, why?
Well, first of all, I want to give a shout out to my aunt, Sandra. She was working the polls in Riverside. She got a little blood clot in her lung and passed out on Election Day. And
oh, no.
If Donna hadn't won, we might all be sitting here wearing all black. But the
oh, my goodness.
Basically what happened, I think, it was kind of an upset, but also Donna was, you know, the sentimental favorite really from the start. She was doing very well in the polls the whole time. I think this was, as much as it's a victory for Donna, it's a victory for the Democratic rank and file, the people knocking on doors, doing the canvassing. For a lot of those folks, unless they were around for Obama or around for Alvin Brown, which most of them weren't, for a lot of these guys and gals, this is their first big their first real win in political activism, and it's something that they've worked very hard for. This election kind of, you know, who would have thought that the marathon mm-hmm. runner would have more stamina than the competition, but that's how it turned out. Not just physically, being out there day after day, you know, from sun up to sundown, but the emotional stamina to stand up to the negative attacks. This election was a repudiation of the style that has won Republican elections for the past 15 or 20 years. The, you know, just saying negative things, all that money spent on, you know, like by the time Donna Deegan got her first campaign contribution, Daniel Davis already had more money raised. Daniel Davis already had more money raised when she started than she ever ended up getting. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, money didn't matter.
Yeah, that was perhaps the most remarkable thing of all. 549-2937. Deegan ran a centrist campaign appealing to both parties. A.G. Gankarski, as you've been writing about, Davis, presumably upon the advice of his consultants, made a decision to go hard right, to go MAGA, essentially, departing from the sort of moderate brand he had built in this city over many years. Clearly, his team thought it would pay dividends, and it didn't.
Yeah, I mean, he started that head of the March election when he had to define himself against Al Ferrero, Leanna Cumber. But he stepped it up. Usually, you see people move to the center in these runoff elections. But what Davis did was he doubled down. He doubled down on the Dean Black Duval Republican Party strategy of defining Deegan as defund the police and so forth. Doubled down on extremists like Esther Byrd, who hosted an event instead of debating with Donna Deegan, hosted an event at the police union building. Brendan Leslie, a J6er, hosted another event with the sheriff in Davis. And the ads were just all TK Waters all the time. It was as if Daniel Davis hadn't lived in the city for decades, hadn't been a known quantity in the city for decades, and needed the sheriff to basically carry him across the finish line. Now, I understand the strategy because, according to the Davis team, Waters has a 70% approval rating in the city. But, you know, just running the sort of thin kind of campaign with these base dog whistle appeals, it obviously didn't float. And if you look at the Republicans who came over and endorsed Donna Deegan, everybody from Randy DeFore, to Scott Wilson, to Matt Carlucci, and you know, you look at the crossover Republican vote, you look at the NPA vote, there was very little that Daniel Davis had to offer people who weren't dyed-in-the-wool MAGA Republicans. And in that sense, even though he had $8 million in the bank or $9 million, whatever it ends up being in the end, it's kind of, you know, it explains why he did what he did. Deegan did raise serious money. I mean, $2 million is real money, and it apparently was enough. In this case, Deegan had the you know, name ID that has a tangible value all its own. But, you know, I think if Deegan had raised $500,000 way into Brochet in 2019, she wouldn't have been able to win because she wouldn't have been able to counter the messages. So it took some resources, but it was a combination of things. And Deegan ran a very center-left campaign, and it's something that apparently Jacksonville is ready for in 2023.
Yeah, I think all of that's right. Also, as you point out, just an incredibly powerful and positive personal brand after decades on television, and then also with the formation of the Donna Foundation. The endorsements from Republicans, did those matter? I mean, Jack Webb, we saw Governor DeSantis endorse Daniel Davis, but he never came to town to campaign with Davis. Rick Scott did, but not the governor. Do you think that hurt Davis?
I don't think so. I think the story was already told at that point. Maybe Daniel didn't realize it, but Ron DeSantis certainly did. So I think the book was written at that point. Again, as Daniel said in his concession speech, this is not the result I anticipated 48 hours ago. I think the polls that came down the stretch, I think they told the story. I mean, again, you're looking at 12% Republican flip, you know, to the Democrat. I think it was higher than that. I think it was probably 17-18%. You're looking at 52% on the independents, MPAs. I think it was higher than that. It's probably 54%, which is incredibly unusual. The MPAs usually flip Republican. I think that, you know, politics is all about words and music. You need the money for the words, but you need the message for the music. Mm-hmm. And she had both. And he did not. He had the words, he had the money, but he didn't have the music. And that's where he fell down.
Here's an email from Susie. I heard Donna on your show the day she announced she was running, and she said she would not partake in negative campaigning. She didn't, and I appreciate it, especially after such divisive and negative campaigning we've seen the past few years. You know, David Bauerlein, you've been writing about all of the ramifications of this in the Florida Times-Union. And this race has gotten a lot of ink all over the country and even overseas. Our Florida politics are of a lot of interest to a lot of people. And people are wondering how significant Deegan's win is when it comes to the balance of power in Florida. I think it's fair to say Florida is still reliably red, but there are a lot of purple spots, and Jacksonville is one of them.
Without a doubt, Jacksonville is a purple county, and that's significant in terms of the big cities being Democratic. The big issue is obviously in the rural areas or the exurban suburban areas, still very red. In Northeast Florida, that's still the case. But it does sort of, is this a template that somebody could use on a statewide scale where you sort of do this cheerful repudiation of negative ads and say they're false. Here's what I say. Stare right into the camera from your living room. That possibly could be something. And then, you know, you appeal to the independent voters there who maybe are not as motivated by these base voter appeals. But it is interesting that, you know, Donna Deegan was on national morning news shows. Mm-hmm. The New York Times wrote about it. There was a sense that somehow this was maybe an inflection point in state politics to show that, the Democrats aren't that dead and buried in Florida after all.
You know, as I hear you saying this, I'm thinking back to the presidency of Ronald Reagan. He was called the great communicator, of course, and he had this very positive, sunny, forward-looking demeanor and messaging. I really do feel on the other side of the aisle, she is a Democrat. Donna Deegan is in that vein. She's an exceptional communicator, and she radiates positivity and optimism. Yes. Voters respond to that, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican.
And not only does she resonate positivity, she's clearly someone who, God knows if anyone would have a reason to be bitter or angry or to lose their cool on camera or even to scream up at the heavens on occasion, she would have every right to. You mentioned Reagan, which is very apropos. He said in his debate in 1984, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And I think that particular question is a question that Democratic candidates for the next 5 years should be asking against the Republican opposition. As it is now, you know, DeSantis controls the state house. He'll be there till 2025 or 2027, depending. The still reliably, solidly Republican on the council, but mm-hmm. we have four school board seats coming up in next year.
We'll talk about the school board in a minute. Yeah,
I expect two of those to flip Democrat. And come 2027, you know, with Donna running for re-election and all these Republicans on council posturing against each other to run against her, I could see Democrats potentially flipping the council. You know, Jacksonville was the biggest city in America with a Republican mayor until this election. Now Florida has more female mayors than any state in America. Mm-hmm. So even with DeSantis dominating, you can point, as you could point back to Trump, that these provocations that they've been doing have had a severe backlash. And, you know, the Republicans are safe in the safe, carved-out gerrymandered districts, but these liberal progressive activists here in Northeast Florida, especially under the tutelage of Nikki Fried and now Donna mm-hmm. Deegan, they're fired up and ready to go, like Obama said.
You know, AG, certainly there was a lot of progressive energy behind Deegan's win. That said, she is expected to govern from the center lane. And how will she work with a Republican supermajority on the city council to get her agenda passed?
You know, I think there are some easy wins. The Jacksonville Journey reboot, there's bipartisan appetite for that. Everybody understands that crime is an issue, and what's been done since the Journey was disbanded hasn't worked. I think when you get to thornier issues like the stadium renovations, like pension negotiations with the public safety, police and fire, they're looking for defined benefits again. That may be a bit stickier. You remember Alvin Brown was bedeviled by the pension issue his entire time in office.
Yeah.
And he didn't really get his deal until Lenny Curry was elected. And that deal was undermined soon thereafter. So I think Donna Deegan is going to look at the politics of the possible. I don't expect that this is going to lead to a groundswell of Democrats winning at large races. There's not a bench full of Donna Deegans out there waiting to run for office. Donna Deegan was her own case. She's a very unique candidate, but there's a reason that you have five at large Republicans on the city council. The resources are still with the GOP, and she's going to have to navigate that supermajority council, going to have to navigate an adversarial sheriff, navigate politicized public safety unions. And she's going to be tested by somebody like Shad Khan also. And, you know, how she staffs up, how she rises to those challenges, that's going to define her administration. I mean, her getting elected is audacious and a big deal, but governing is a hard part. And governing, as Alvin Brown can tell you, has a lot of pitfalls built in. She's going to bring in a lot of unknown quantities to City Hall. How will they handle the pressures, the scrutiny? We saw that the Alvin Brown administration, where he had the neighborhood sad who basically got pilloried for not being up to that job. And just because Donna Deegan's in her honeymoon period right now doesn't mean those questions won't be asked and doesn't mean those pressures won't be on her. It won't be like Lenny Curry had the situation where he came in and basically said, we're going to do some bold things and had a couple years to do it. I don't know if Donna Deegan has that runway. Her first mistake could be a critical one.
I think that's fair to say, and I think women always face a higher bar in the political arena for all the reasons that you mentioned. There's less room for error. And so let's go to some calls now at 549-2937, Adam in St. John's. Hi, Adam.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
All right, thanks for calling in. So obviously you're in St. John's, but what are your thoughts about the Duval election?
Yeah, well, I mean, overall, I have to say I'm certainly pleased with the outcome of the election. I'm certainly tired of seeing all those negative ads. The main comment I wanted to make was that I don't think it's overlooked, but maybe not said enough. I think Donna won because of 30 to 40 years of positive brand building. I think if there was another outside Democratic candidate that was relatively unknown, I think the negative campaigning would have worked just fine. So I wouldn't give as much credit to, you know, Republicans jumping ship as one might think. I think it's more a credit to, you know, what Donna's accomplished in Jacksonville over her career.
Thank you, Adam. I think that's right. I also think, though, at the same time, Jack, as you pointed out, there was so much disgust over the JEA mm-hmm. scheme in particular. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about what's going on in federal court as we speak regarding that grand jury investigation and the indictments that flowed from the failed push to privatize JEA.
Yeah.
A lot of folks of all political persuasions, they didn't want any more of that. They voted for her as a protest against corruption and cronyism and the perception that a few people were going to line their pockets over the sale of JEA.
And as we've seen from the testimony in federal court the last couple of days, a lot of truth to that, right? I think you recall one of the callers we had on election night, Steve from the West Side, you know, a dye-in-the-wool Republican,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And he was confessing to us on the air. He goes, "I'm ashamed of myself. I voted for a Democrat."
Right. Yeah.
And
that was the reason he said
it was
why?
A JEA issue.
Yeah.
And that's I was like, wow. Thank you. You're forgiven. But I think it was a big deal. You know, going back to AG's comment though, as to observations with regards to how does she govern from here, Alvin Brown made a big mistake when he got elected. I mean, he threw the baby out with the bathwater. Now
he got rid of everybody.
He got rid of everybody. All right, mm-hmm. And that's why. Let's face it. I mean, he did some things, but it was essentially a failed administration. Lenny Curry. I mean, whatever. I mean, I get it, Don. Yeah, Tim Baker's got to go. Ryan Hughes, you all got to go.
Those are the consultants and folks and people around the
absolutely.
Current mayor.
All okay. right, but reach back to John Payton's people. Mm-hmm. Give a call to Adam Hollingsworth. I don't know where he's hiding in Tallahassee somewhere, but some people with some institutional knowledge who knew how to build an administration, a successful administration. Talk about the Jacksonville journey. That was John Payton.
Yeah.
Right? John Payton actually had a pension deal negotiated until Alvin Brown's people scuttled it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So reach back. She wants to be bipartisan. Do it.
And that's something we see over and over. When someone new comes into office, they assume anything that their predecessor did must be terrible, mm-hmm. and they throw it all out. You don't necessarily have to change every single thing or get rid of every single agency head or staffer who knows something. I mean, I think that's good analysis, David.
Sure, absolutely. She ran on one of her pillars is infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
and Lenny Curry has greatly expanded the spending on streets, roads, drainage, public buildings. It was when Alvin Brown left office, it was well under $100 million. It's $500 million now. Actually, Donna Deegan's biggest challenge will be to maintain that level of funding for infrastructure. So there are things that she can build on or maybe change some of the structure. But, Lenny Curry supported doubling the gas tax, supported a half-cent sales tax for pension reform. All those things are going to go to the benefit of Donna Deegan's time in office in terms of the financial structure. In terms of people, obviously her main advisors, the main core, will have to be her own people. Does she need to make wholesale changes to department heads? Probably not right off the bat. Then she has decisions to make on the various commissions. Does she want to force people out the way that Lenny Curry did, or just wait for their terms to come up? So that's a tactical decision in terms of how that's perceived by people out there. So those are big decisions she's got in front of her.
549-2937, Linda in Mandarin. Good morning, Linda.
Hey, good morning. I hope you don't hear too much noise. I'm out walking. I'm being healthy. I wanted to say that I think that Donna prevailed because people knew her, or they thought they knew her, and the negative ads weren't as effective. But, people want an option. And I think even though this is a red state, it's a red oppressive state. And I think people were just, even Republicans I've talked to quietly, say, they think that some Republicans have gone too far in, like, smashing it in your face that only our way, and if it's not our way, it's no way. And this is city government. They want somebody who they think would go to the mat for them. And when she gets pushback from Republican City Council, I expect her to use her skill set and put them on blast. I expect her to let them know, not being obtrusive, but part of negotiation is leverage. And part of the leverage is letting the constituents know who's trying to block something she's trying to do for the citizenry. And, some people will vote R, and other people will say, wait, they're trying to block something for my neighborhood? I've got to call my city council person. And maybe, AG, some of us will actually get into politics because we see that maybe that glass ceiling is broken, not because Donna is a unique person, which she is, but there are a lot of talented women in North Florida that can lead, that are leading. We've been leading from behind. And I don't think that should be assumed that we're going to continue to do that.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda. And let's get all of our male panelists to weigh in on this, because as Linda pointed out, not only did Deegan win, Joyce Morgan also won citywide Tuesday night. The Democratic Morgan beating Republican Jason Fisher to become Duval County property appraiser. Another path-breaking victory. Mm-hmm. Like Deegan, we saw Joyce Morgan doing an incredible number of forums, town halls, and events. There were a lot of factors that went into her victory, but I think central to Morgan's success is that she outworked her opponent in the same way it's perceived Deegan outworked Davis on the campaign trail.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I could be wrong, but in my opinion, I think that over the last 10 years in American politics, overwhelmingly the most important factor in American politics in the last 10 years is misogyny, hatred of women. Like, overt, we had a president who said horrible things about women, and he was endorsed. We've had, you know, so much of the legislation on the state level, and then, you know, the Roe versus Wade stuff and all that. I think people are finally, like she said, I think they're getting sick of it. You look at last year when the Florida Democratic Party basically scuttled Nikki Fried in order to nominate Charlie Crist and take the worst loss that Democrats have taken on that level in many, many years. I think a lot of people kind of felt like, well, why not give her a chance? You know, and a lot of that, you know, we don't get into the details, but some of the stuff that people were saying about Donna was pretty horrible. And thanks to her for being such a positive person, a lesser person would have punched them.
Alicia in Avondale. Alicia, how are you?
Yes, good morning, Melissa. And congratulations to Donna. I'm thrilled. I think we've got a climate change and the environmental in the political environment in Jacksonville. I want to point out, though, that Donna is going to be hamstrung to some extent by all of the preemptions, the local preemptions that have been happening in Tallahassee in the last 3 or 4 years. Trees, zoning, design, and more importantly, one of the more recent ones is the inability of citizens to sue if a board or government entity makes a decision that they don't agree with. They no longer will have the right to sue to try to overturn that. And I myself have taken advantage of that in the past because of some construction and changes in Avondale. But that's going to really hamstring her. So because of that particular bill, it's going to be critical that Mayor Deegan get the right people on the right boards and the right commissions, the right people on those commissions of the ones that she will have appointing authority on, because we will not have as citizens the right to go back and change any of that if it's not done right in the first place. Thank you.
Thank you, Alicia. AG, she's right in that Tallahassee increasingly has been stomping on home rule for Florida cities on a whole range of issues. So that's an important point, too.
Yeah, I mean, that she's dead on. The attacks on home rule in the last few years have been legion. And it's something that Deegan's going to have to deal with. The city council's only going to go so far with some things, too. So, you know, that's another bind that she's in. I want to take some issue with people expecting her to be a sort of this fire-breathing bully pulpit type. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think she's going to be more persuasive behind the scenes in many ways, much like Tommy Azzurri was. I knew Tommy Azzurri pretty well, and I watched him operate quite a bit. And Tommy Azzurri was always burning up the phone, talking to people, trying to get them on his side. And, you know, that's how you got the HRO expansion through in March with a 12-6 vote and without Lenny Curry vetoing. It was that kind of quiet, gradual persuasion. And I think you're going to see a lot of that from Deegan. She's not going to overplay her hand. She's not going to be Nikki Fried Jr. I don't think Nikki Fried and her approach is what won Donna Deegan in the mayor's race. In fact, I think she won in spite of Nikki Fried. And
you know, to that end, you know, if you look at Joyce Morgan, sort of the same deal. Joyce Morgan ran a very moderate campaign, and on the city council, she was also a moderate. She didn't say things just to hear herself talk. She wasn't a walking soundbite. What she was a pragmatist who got things done and made her points known. And I think that's the model that ultimately prevails for Democrats and, you know, for Democratic women running for office. I don't think that the sort of, you know, polemicist model is what people are looking for. People are looking for people who actually solve problems, especially after this era of toxic masculinity. I don't think they're looking for a female equivalent to that. What they're looking for are things to get done, for things to be run correctly, without a lot of drama. And I think Deacon and Morgan are going to bring that to the table from day one.
Gus on the South Side. Hello, Gus.
Morning, guys. How are you?
All right. Thanks for calling. Happy Friday.
Thanks. Same to you. I don't want to necessarily poo-poo what y'all said a few minutes ago, but I just want to give my insight as a Republican, and I've been I was in Reagan's Navy, so I've been a Republican for quite a while. But I got to tell you, I have not voted. I've mainly voted Democrat in the past 10 years. I'll let you do the math on that. As far as why that change may have happened, but I voted for Donna. Mainly because I'm tired of the garbage talk. I'm just tired of that whole line that the Republican Party takes nowadays. It's ridiculous. I'm over it. I've considered switching parties or going independent. I don't know. But I just want to give my insight. That's why I voted. And I don't vote Democrat across the board. I listen to the messages. And that's what it comes down to, the message, not just what's being said, but the way it's being said.
Well, thank you, Gus. And, you know, Gus, I think there were a lot of folks out there like you who maybe split their tickets because, as others on this panel have pointed out, Jack, all five citywide seats on the city council are going to remain in Republican hands, mm-hmm. although Democrats did make gains, Jimmy Peluso winning in District 7. That was a big pickup. Rockmon Johnson in District 14, federal redistricting changed the demographics of that district around, and mm-hmm. he was able to win there.
Mm-hmm. But the Republicans maintain the majority on the council, but I don't think that's a big deal. I mean, all politics are local. This is municipal politics. This is about what you're going to get done for your district. I think Donna Deegan's going to do fine with the council. She's got that personal touch. You know, the last caller, he makes a good point, though. This is an inflection point for the Republican Party. I remember when Mike Hogan lost to Alvin Brown, had a conversation with some Republican leaders, and their attitude was kind of like, yeah, we did a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. Well, guys, Republican Party's been circling the drain since you let the Tea Party in the back door,
yep.
okay?
Yep.
And that's that cancer, I think, is finally metastasized. And it's time to clean it up. Again, the angry, exclusionary rhetoric is not working anymore. That caller just reflected it. It's time to get rid of Dean Black and let's figure this thing out.
That's yes. the local party chair.
Sorry, Dean.
Let's go to Jerry in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hey, I first want to say congrats to Donna Deegan. And it was really wonderful to see such a positive campaign win. But I wanted to point out that I think people in the nonprofit sector and the arts have a really great skill set to serve in local government. For instance, they're used to clarifying a mission statement, mm-hmm. knowing exactly what the community needs, who to lift up. They know about grant writing, leading a whole board of directors. And most importantly, what Donna Deegan said, centering the idea of leading with love. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Okay, lots of discussion about that. People want emailing the show, will Deegan be pushed to the left by her progressive supporters? I think the answer to that is likely no. I think she'll try to govern from the center. But we'll watch the campaign or the mayoralty of Donna Deegan, of course, and report on it. But let's talk about another big story from the week. It's 549-2937. We talked about JEA and how that factored into the race. Well, all eyes have been on testimony about the privatization scandal. Now, the Times Union reported this week that former JEA CEO Aaron Zahn told an attorney who was hired to help privatize the utility that Zahn was planning on getting about $40 million from a bonus scheme that he and another executive concocted secretly. Now, this is according to testimony in court Wednesday from an FBI agent who was investigating the 2019 privatization campaign, the effort to sell off JEA to its presumed the parent company of Florida Power and Light. This isn't a huge surprise, David, but wow, Aaron Zahn thought he was going to walk away with $40 million in return for helping to sell off JEA.
Yeah, it reinforces the central aspect of the government's entire prosecution, which is their argument will be that it's not against the law to sell your municipal utility, but they will argue that the motivation behind this push from the JEA's top leader was to enrich himself. Mm-hmm. And so then that's already been laid out in their indictment. This adds some more information that, you know, he was actually, according to this testimony, telling a attorney who was brought in to help get this deal done that Aaron Zahn expected to make around $40 million prior to the JEA board approving this incentive plan, which was very convoluted and did not tell the board, certainly, that when they approved it, that if JEA is sold, here's the financial windfall that people working for JEA in top executive positions would be able to get. The JEA board was under the understanding it'd be a few million dollars and was sort of a standard boilerplate incentive plan, not something that would create huge financial windfalls if a sale were to go through.
Zahn also allegedly told people other members of his senior executive team at JEA were each going to get $10 million. So that's a lot of utility bills adding up for a lot of ducats for a few people that were in on this scheme. Amazing stuff.
Oh, yeah. You know, Zahn's not going to get his $40 million, but he might get $40,000 in his commissary account, and that's practically being a millionaire in prison. I haven't.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, I'm not even joking.
Shelton's in a good mood today.
I mean, you know, the federal time is a different type of time from what I hear. I haven't
Club Fed. Is that what you're getting at?
I haven't gotten as deep into this particular story because I just don't like any of these people. But the thing that keeps coming through the reports I've read is just the stunning incompetence on every level of this operation. Like based on the testimony, how do these people even park correctly? You know, and watching the way it's all playing out now, I'm glad JEA wasn't sold as a citizen, but part of me almost likes to imagine what would have happened if that crew of people had actually done it. Like I could totally, you know. Who knows?
Yeah. You know, and A.G. Gankarski as
$5 billion worth of oregano in a plastic bag.
Oh, as the testimony continues in federal court, A.G. Gankarski, local civic leaders are ever vigilant, believing that state lawmakers in Tallahassee will keep trying on behalf of utility lobbyists to pass legislation that would open the door to selling JEA. Legislation that moved in the spring session had a carve out, as I understand, for Duval County to sort of protect JEA for now anyway. But certainly this is going to come back again.
Yeah, I mean, Tallahassee continues to make encroachments on local utilities. And just like the one in Gainesville, JEA is within the sites. The perpetual septic tank phase out is one pretext for such a thing. But you know, if we look at what happened with JEA, how did Aaron Zahn get to be CEO in the first place? A compliant board approved him over better candidates, and they cited things like his passion for the job. Mm. And, you know, so that board was responsible for Aaron Zahn being in a position to, you know, carve out a $40 million big scheme for himself. The mayor's office, Lenny Curry. How many times did Aaron Zahn come and go to City Hall over the time he was in a CEO and before that? How many dozens? Who can say? But it was quite a lot. And so, you know, Arizona and Wanamaker are being held up as singular examples here by this prosecution. But, you know, it took a village to create them. And it took a village of idiots in this case, because all of them were responsible for Aaron Zahn's meteoric rise, you know, from being the junior board member to being CEO of the utility, you know, without having relevant experience or competence. And he got lifted up, and we saw that Lenny Curry with a couple other things. Like, I think Joe Peppers at the Kids Hope Alliance, another example of somebody who was promoted well beyond his competence level because they thought it was somebody they could control. And so this is
that turned out to be a faulty assumption, by the way. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and Pepper's case for sure. But, you know, we saw what Zahn was trying to do. And, you know, Zahn was he was such a pivotal failure for the Curry administration, because so much of their approach was looking at privatization as a way of, you know, economizing for the city. And when, you know, selling JA was explored, we were talking $11 billion that would have gone to the general fund of the city. That would have wiped out pension debt. It would have wiped out a lot of things. But nobody counted on 10% for the big guy or for the little guy in Zahn's case.
That's
and,
right.
You know, that's really the issue here. And that's the corruption that Donna Deegan spotlighted successfully. That's the issue that Leanna Cumber was less successful in spotlighting. But, you know, Aaron Zahn, you know, he's a failure that everybody in city government had a hand in.
Yeah,
he wasn't a lone actor.
Yeah, if Zahn hadn't gone off the reservation with this PUP scheme, this plan to enrich himself and a few other people, this sale might well have easily gone through.
Yeah, you know, Melissa, to AG's point, number one, these people weren't idiots, all right? The word on the street was that they were all doing Snoopy dances, all right? Because the senior leadership in the organization knew what was going down, okay? They can say that we were forced to do this, but they all had a hand in it. And Aaron Zahn had a track record before he got that gig. I mean, his track record of BCR Environmental was well established, okay? Mm-hmm. So people had communicated, but they were ignored. They were ignored. And so, mm-hmm. you know, and with regards to the Gainesville Regional Utility stuff and the legislation that was introduced or passed in Tallahassee, there was a carve out for the JEA, but I have it on good authority that GRU is
the utility in Gainesville
is filing a lawsuit to challenge the constitutionality of that statute.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, okay, we'll follow that. Yeah, the Gainesville voters don't want their utility privatized either.
Exactly.
I think it's fair to say. And so that is happening. You know, we are almost out of time, but before we say goodbye to our fearsome foursome, let's go around the horn and talk about some stories that might have missed your attention in this very busy news week. Yes, time for the lightning round. I'll start. Duval County Public Schools are stepping up the pace to try to replace former Superintendent Diana Green, who recently retired. Under state law, they need to have an interim person in place by their next school board meeting, June 6th, and then they will undertake the search for a permanent superintendent. Something to watch. Shelton Hall.
I don't have a particular story, but I want to say next week is the Jacksonville Jazz Festival, one of my favorite things I'm helping to host. Thanks to the station for letting me do that. Make sure you check out our preview at the Jacksonville Music Experience. And beyond that, I just want to say the new schedule for the NFL came out. The Jaguars have the seventh easiest schedule this season coming up, a 42% winning percentage among their opponents. So since Donna won, since we've got construction coming in downtown, I'll go ahead and call it right now. The Jacksonville Jaguars will be the next Super Bowl champion.
All right.
The scandal with Pat Mahomes, his brother, will torpedo the Chiefs. Jaguars are running the table. Mark my words.
We'll remember those words. We'll see how that goes. David Barreline.
So Mayor Lenny Curry finished the removal of the Confederate monument in what used to be called Hemming Park is now called James Weldon Johnson Park. So when people get together tomorrow for the Emancipation Celebration Day at James Weldon Johnson Park, there will be zero sign of the Confederate memorial that had stood there since 1898.
Wow. Yeah, that's a big change. Still a big one in Springfield, though, of course, that remains an issue for many. And A.G. Gankarski.
Well, I wanted to go back to the mayor's race real quick. Obviously, we talked about the DeSantis endorsement just being a paper endorsement in the end. But Donald Trump, he had a say also. And he said on his Truth Social platform that, you know, if Daniel Davis had reached out to me for an endorsement, I would have endorsed him. He would have won. So even in our little local mayor's race, this Trump DeSantis drama overshadows it all.
Yep, that indeed it does. And Jack Webb.
I want to give a shout out to Lydia Bell, who is the president of the Community Association in Brentwood, who is in their efforts to oppose an ill-advised and perhaps illegal liquor store on Gulf Fair.
That's ongoing. And in fact, Al Ferraro is saying, let's use money from Confederate monument removal on this matter.
Let's talk more about that.
That's a hard no
Melissa.
For me.
That's a hard no for you. Yeah, we could have spent some time on that. We just ran out of time.
I had the solution last year for the statue thing. I told them, sell me the statue for $1. I will cover the cost of its removal. I'll take that bronze right up to New York, and I will sell the statue to her family.
There you go. Thank
you. The deal is already made.
The deal's been made. Just call Shelton at 1-800-I-DO-DEALS.
549-2937.
Thank you, everyone. Shelton Hull, A.G. Gankarski, Jack Webb, and David Bauerlein. Always great to see you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In a moment, we'll take a listen inside JME, the Jacksonville Music Experience, spotlighting local artists. That's next.
Join us this week on Science Friday as we dive into the ancestry of butterflies.
Using the DNA data, we used fossils and geographic information and also plant data. We tried to trace the history of how butterflies evolved on this planet.
Plus, a new book argues that bees have feelings too. All on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on WJCT News 89.9.
Momentum builds behind using the 14th Amendment to avoid a default. Not all Democrats are on board.
I think that's a precedent to just absolve Congress from being adults.
Also, states weigh new restrictions on abortion, Florida parents sue over book bans, and conflicting accounts emerge over Harry and Meghan's Harry New York cab ride. More on the roundup next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. The Jacksonville Music Experience covers all the latest music news from artists far and wide, including local talents. They mix up all the best cuts from national and international and local to rotation on the independent 89.9 HD4, WJCT's new music discovery station. Our own arts and culture editor Matt Shaw is here to share three new songs that have been reviewed at jacksmusic.org. Having a little talking thing today. I know it's been
doing a
long week.
Lot of talking.
And it's been these songs have been added to rotation on the independent. Let's listen now to our JME DJ sessions. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So tell us about Lainey Tripp.
Yeah. This is a singer and guitarist who hails from New Smyrna, originally just south of us, but put some roots down here in Jacksonville before moving to LA a little while ago. But she dropped her last EP, 2021's Fishing from Heaven. And had the release show at Blue Jay in Jacksonville Beach. Anyway, last year she connected with a super producer named Benny Yurko, who's well known for his work with Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. She spent a week at his home studio in Burlington, Vermont. The result is the new EP, Cedar Island Songs. It's a dreamy, sparkly collection of experimental folk songs that evoke the ocean. I want to play the track Moving On. Like many of the record's five songs, it's full of surprises, subtle synth lines, even a saxophone lead in there. Here's Lainey Tripp with Moving On.
Unfortunately, we're not hearing her the singing part of that song, but it's great stuff.
We've got little time here, but I think just instrumentally, I would listen to that and just float in the ocean.
Yeah, that's dreamy, isn't it? Yeah, that's Lainey Tripp Moving On. All right.
Yeah, next up, like Lainey Tripp, Jack's singer-songwriter Brooke Garwood has roots at the beaches. As Sunchild, she dropped a new record in late April. It's called Everything. It's a polished, mellow album with earnest lyrics. Sweet melodies. I want to play the title track from that record. Here's Sunchild with Everything. Did you try and hide it? Because I wouldn't like it. Oh, you were right. I made something out of nothing. Well, you said it was important. You said it was a part of the plan. Deep beneath the surface, just far enough until you can't stand. But then you tried to run. Once you fell, also beautiful. Very nice. Very nice.
That's Sunchild. Okay. Last but not least, Ducats.
Yes.
I use that phrase in the news portion of the show. Tell us about Ducats.
Yeah, Ducats. That's Ducats. It's the project of Trent Holton. Multi-instrumentalist who moved to Jax from Chicago a couple years ago. He's put a great band together, really emerged as one of the more active performers in the city, playing locally often and touring around the Southeast. In April, Ducats released the single Surrender. It's a really pleasant dose of mellow garage rock a la Beach Fossils or Real Estate. I think it's the perfect local tune to round out our triple play of chill music this morning. Here's Ducats with Surrender.
Okay, these are all so great. And let's, again, explain. If you tune into 89.9 HD for The Independent, you hear local artists on regular rotation.
Yeah.
Nowhere else on the radio dial will you get that.
Nowhere else in Jacksonville. 20 minutes after the hour, every hour, we play a local song. We're always changing the rotation, adding new songs to that local rotation, but also new music from across the globe there, too. And you know, most of these artists you won't hear on commercial radio or anywhere else in Jacksonville.
So listen to 89.9 HD for The Independent. You can also stream it and read great articles and reviews anytime you feel like it at jacksmusic.org. Arts and culture editor Matt Shaw, who isn't a band himself, by the way, and is so talented. So thank you so much, Matt, as always, for giving us the beautiful music.
Thanks. That's really nice. Thanks, Melissa.
We're going to close with more of Lainey Tripp. Enjoy Float Away on the Clouds, but come back to me today at noon for the Florida Roundup. And have a great weekend, everybody. I'm not afraid to
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.